This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 11th of February 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of February, which this week have been edited by Gordon and Liz Legg. Your readers today are Jane Rutter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, John Richards. The four main headlines this week are Licoricea arrives ready for unveiling, Battle looming over estate plan, Poll, don't close Andover Road, and set with new steps by station. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Jane.
Licoricea arrives ready for unveiling. Everything had been made ready for the unveiling of the Jewish figure was driven into Stroud, Gloucestershire, on the back of a flatbed lorry on Monday, before it was lifted onto its base outside the Discovery Centre on Jury Street by a small crane, with the whole process taking almost 2 hours. Multiple members of the Licoricea Appeal, who have led the 5-year project to install the statue, were in attendance to mark its arrival in the city, as was the sculptor Ian Rank Broadley. Mr. Rank Broadley had produced many acclaimed works, among which are several designs for British coinage and the memorial statue of Princess Diana at Kensington Palace. Speaking to the Chronicle, he said, "It's an honour to be involved in this project and to be recognising someone who lived in 1250, a woman who made a significant contribution to this country in terms of financial expertise and one who is probably forgotten by many people today. It's a very significant piece of sculpture. I think it's probably the first public sculpture in the country of a Jewish woman, or one of very few." Despite having works placed around the country, Mr. Rank Broadley said, "Winchester ranked very highly among those spots." Winchester ranks very highly indeed. It was the seat of Saxon kings, and as we know, was hugely important in an earlier period of history. And of course, it has a magnificent cathedral, alongside many other fantastic buildings, he added. "Hopefully, once they see the statue, the people of Winchester will take it to their hearts and it will become part of the fabric of Winchester and immortality of Licoricea. The sculpture, which took around 6 months to create, will remain partially covered until it's officially unveiled by Prince Charles. It will then be blessed by the chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, Ephraim Mirovis, on Thursday, February the 10th. Spectators are advised to gather at either the Ark on Jury Street or near to Castle Avenue near the Great Hall from 11:30 a.m. There will be traffic and event stewards in place during the visit, supported by police to ensure a safe and secure occasion. Licoricea was a leading community figure in the 13th century. Despite being widowed twice, she successfully brought up her family, conducted her business and prospered in a hostile society. She was a major financier to Henry III and his queen, Eleanor. Money raised from Licoricea and from the estate of her second husband, David, contributed to the building of Westminster Abbey and its rich shrine to Edward the Confessor. She was murdered, along with her Christian maid, in the city in 1277. Jews were part of the English community from 1067 until expulsion in 1290, having arrived after the Norman conquest in 1066. Jury Street was where the Jewish community was based. And I need to add here that sadly, Prince Charles tested positive for COVID yesterday morning. That was Thursday when he was supposed to be unveiling the statue and therefore was self-isolating. He sent a letter of apology, which was read by the Lord Lieutenant Nigel Atkinson, who unveiled the statue in the place of the Prince of Wales.
Battle looming over estate plan. The battle lines are being drawn up over another planning battle set to erupt on the edge of Winchester. Local people have been alerted to a developer promoting the building of more than 300 homes on land known as Pitt Vale off Romsey Road, close to the Winchester Village development. Developers Drew Smith wanted to build the new estate on the southwestern edge of the city, an area coming under strong pressure for development. Villagers fought off a scheme for 5,000 homes in the Royal Down proposal, a new town between Oliver's Battery and Hursley. The Pitt Vale scheme surfaces at the same time as unconfirmed reports on social media that the nearby South Winchester Golf Club, owned by Bloor Homes, has signed on a 10-year lease to remain as a golf course. David Killeen, a member of the Save South Winchester group, has said, "I'm very concerned that developers are once again seeking an opportunity to promote plans to build over the green fields of rural South Winchester. I urge the Liberal cabinet to let residents know how many homes Drew Smith intends to build and where they will go as part of their local plan for Winchester and partnership deal with the South Hampshire authorities. The issue is set to be a factor in the City Council elections in May, with the Conservatives accusing the Lib Dem control council of promoting development. The council has drawn up a list of potential schemes and points out that the wish list is a statutory requirement which all councils must compile." Stephen Clark, head of planning at Drew Smith, said, "Winchester City Council is currently preparing a new local plan and, as part of this process, asked for land that was available for development to be submitted. In response, Drew Smith provided details of the land at Pitt Vale Romsey Road. The council has identified the site as HUO3 and the published Strategic Housing and Employment Land Availability Assessment, which includes an indicative site capacity for 318 homes. The next stage is for the council to consider all the sites put forward and to identify their preferred options for development. There will then be a further period of public consultation during which the council will invite comments." On South Winchester Golf Club, the management did not respond to a request for comment, and nor did Bloor Homes.
Poll: don't close Andover Road. Winchester Conservatives are campaigning to block the controversial closure of Andover Road North and say they have overwhelming public support. The main road is due to be closed to through traffic when the adjacent 2,000-home Kings Barton development reaches 650 homes due in 2025. The Tories have conducted a survey and say 91% of residents oppose the closure, with traffic diverted through the new estate along Winchester Avenue. Worthies campaigner Senior Biddle said, "We call on Carla Holmes and Winchester City Council to review the original planning permission and work with the County Council to come up with an option to suit the majority of residents." During November and December 2021, Winchester Conservative councillors and campaigners led by Ms. Biddle distributed the survey across the northwest of the city. More than 750 responses were received, with most coming from Hairstock, Week and Kings Barton. Some 78% of respondents support retaining both Andover Road North and Winchester Avenue open. 9% support the closure of Andover Road North, are based mainly on a wide range of areas across North Winchester, and cited issues including safety for pedestrians and children in Kings Barton, poor traffic flow, pollution, unsuitability of roads, serious concern about rat runs and rerouted traffic, consequences of A34 overspill, and efficient access into Winchester from northern areas. The closure was part of the planning permission given by the Conservative Lib Dem coalition government in 2012, with the support of the Conservative-controlled County Council. Recently, the City Council revealed that a partial retention of Andover Road was being considered to allow buses from the proposed new park and ride car parks that are earmarked for the area, with Sir John Moore Barracks a possible location once the military vacates the base.
Safety boost with new steps by station. Safety is set to be boosted for railway passengers in Winchester with new steps planned by Hampshire County Council. The steps, which will start to be constructed on February the 14th and should be finished in April, have been funded by South Western Railway, Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council. They connect the station car park to the north side of Stockbridge Road, just next to Cranworth Road. The project will improve the safety of the area, as it will mean that the public will not need to cross the busy Stockbridge Road. This includes students travelling to and from Peter Simmons College. The construction is set to cost £600,000, with Winchester City Council contributing £50,000. In January, Hampshire County Council said they were contributing £150,000 to the project. The largest contributor is the South Western Railway Customer and Communities Improvement Fund, with £450,000. Councillor Lucille Thompson, who represents the local area, said, "This is great news. It's going to be a lot safer, particularly for students at Peter Simmons, who come to Winchester by train and who will no longer need to cross the busy Stockbridge Road to get to and from college." The Lib Dem team has been working for better walking and cycling connections in the local area for years, and this is a really helpful step forward. A letter to neighbours in the area from South Western Railway said, "The project will provide some real benefits for the local area, providing an additional walking route to the station for use by students and the general public, encouraging greater use of sustainable transport when going to and from Peter Simmons College and other destinations in the area. The scheme complements the priorities set out in the Winchester Movement Strategy of looking to encourage greater use of walking and public transport and to reduce city centre traffic. Any short-term construction-related impacts of the project will be closely monitored and mitigated by the site team to minimise any impact to the railway's neighbours and those who live on Cranworth Road and Stockbridge Road. The nature of construction works means, unfortunately, that some disturbance will be unavoidable, and we would like to apologise now for any disruption caused. We always aim to minimise the impact on the local community during the construction phase of the project and will make every effort to keep noise and disruption to a minimum. The work to install the staircase is due to start on February the 14th, with completion marked for early April. And for more information about the project, questions can be sent to ccif@swrailway.com. I'll read that once more. ccif@swrailway.com. That concludes the headlines, and we will continue then with death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person, letter from Westminster, Belgarum, and what's on. And that'll be followed by one of our usual announcements. So first of all, we have death notices. Alkema Gamelkorn, Maria Susanna Rita Alkema Gamelkorn, died peacefully in Winchester on the 29th of February. Clark, Roger Tamblyn Clark, sadly passed away on the 19th of January, aged 82. Edwards, John Dryden Edwards, passed away at home on the 26th of January, aged 83. Green, Mary Green, passed away peacefully at home on the 31st of January, aged 71. Johnson, Pat Nay Castle Johnson, peacefully at Brendon Care Home on the 27th of January, aged 73. Lalonde, Robin Thornhill Lalonde, died on the 8th of January. McCann, Trudy, nay Kingdon McCann, died suddenly at the age of 63. Robbins, Pamela Margaret Robbins, passed away suddenly on the 19th of January, aged 93. Shield, Marion Ney Gullick, Shield, passed away at Winchester Hospice on the 2nd of February, aged 89. Smith, Peter James Smith, passed away peacefully on the 26th of January, aged 91. And now we'll have Christian comment, please, Jane.
Today's Christian comment is titled Growing Together, and it's by Rosemary A. Baker. It's Children's Mental Health Week, and this year's theme is Growing Together, and the focus is on encouraging people to consider how they've grown and how they can help others to grow. This week is run by the mental health charity Place to Be. Children and young people's mental health has never been more important, particularly following the coronavirus pandemic. New research carried out by Place to Be has found that 95% of staff working in UK schools have witnessed increased levels of pupil anxiety since the start of the school year. This has been associated with low self-esteem. This year's theme is about growing emotionally and finding ways to help each other grow. The website says challenges and setbacks can help us grow and adapt, and trying new things can help us to move beyond our comfort zone into a new realm of possibility and potential. However, emotional growth is often a gradual process that happens over time, and sometimes it is easy to feel a bit stuck. In order to help this process, two special assemblies have been developed which show various celebrities discussing growth with children. The website also details activities for adults and other family members. The charity's royal patron, Catherine, the Duchess of Cambridge, will be reading a bedtime story on CBeebies this coming Sunday. She has chosen to read The Owl Who Was Afraid of the Dark. Growth is a very appropriate theme for spring, with its signs of new growth and regeneration in our natural world. I don't know if, like me, you've been watching David Attenborough's new television programme, The Green Planet. It's been incredible watching plants grow. They've been photographed over long periods of time to capture what actually happens. Despite all our research and studies, we haven't been able yet to do the same for children or people in general. We do know what changes in the time period over which it happens. We know most about physical growth, but are even learning more about this. Emotional growth is lagging behind in our knowledge, but sadly, spiritual growth and the things that impede and promote it is even further behind. I learnt nothing about it at medical school, and only by doing a special module came across it in my ministerial training. I wondered if this was because I trained part-time, but was recently trying to help a colleague and discovered he knew very little about the subject despite his full-time training. He found it very enlightening, and it explained where and why he had become stuck. Obviously, it is a natural process and should proceed without problems, but at different rates, perhaps. But sadly, there are many people who find their faith has not developed and grown, and so they lack the resource to provide them with the resilience to cope with life's struggles and setbacks, and often lose their faith altogether. They can, though, be helped, as we all can.
Thank you, Jane. Letters now, and there are 10 this week to the editor, starting with this first one read by Richard.
Which is from Christopher Gordon and is appropriate enough about Jewish history. In all the comment around the Licoricea project, I am disappointed to note the scant credit given to the late Sue Bartlett, but for whose passionate interest and dedicated research into local Jewish history, the statue would probably never have come about. Sue's crucial Southampton University research was posthumously completed and published as a book. She would have been thrilled at the outcome, although as a former vice chair of the Hampshire Sculpture Trust, she might, I suspect, have had something sharp to say about the commissioning process involved. Sue was a much respected county councillor from 1970 to 1997, serving Hampshire with great distinction as leader of the Labour opposition and party spokesperson on education. She was elected chairman of the county council for 1988-99, the centenary year of the Association of County Councils. Hampshire was one of the big hitters in the association, and having a woman and a Labour chair in that year was remarkable. In the light of this, Licorice's unveiling this week, can't resist by sharing an entertaining anecdote that has now become full circle. In the entrance hallway of the association's headquarters at 86 Eaton Square, Belgravia, was a large coloured photograph of their centenary celebration with the Queen in attendance. The picture recorded all the county council chairmen in serried ranks, like an old school photo. The Queen was seated in the centre at the front row. On her immediate left sat Sue, wearing the brightest pair of red shoes imaginable. Some of us appreciated the irony. Was the Queen aware, one wonders, that her neighbour in her London East End youth had been an active member of the Communist Party? I doubt whether this would be included in the briefing for this week's unveiling, but it makes a delightful footnote to the welcome appearance of Licorice. Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Winchester.
And this is a letter from Simon Watson, headed King's Death. Sir, quite a few of your readers can probably remember the 6th of February 1952. I was in my second year at Peter Simmons School, Winchester, and it being a Wednesday afternoon, we had the afternoon off, that being compensated for going in on a Saturday morning, a nuisance. In the afternoon, I was going to see the new film Where No Vultures Fly at the Odeon in Winchester. During the last lesson of the day, Latin, the headmaster, Dr. P.T. Freeman, came in and gravely told us that the King George VI had died early that morning at Sandringham. Virtually everything closed down, so I never did get to see the film, but I learned later that it was about ivory poaching in Kenya, which, coincidentally, was where Princess Elizabeth had become Queen Elizabeth II overnight, and has now reigned for 70 years. Congratulations, Mom. And that's from Simon Watson of Jermyn's Lane, Ampfield.
The next letter is from Judith Martin on the Lido petition. Sir, what a rum saga is unfolding at River Park over Councillor Learney's desire to hand the site to the University of Southampton. There is a neat, almost total coincidence. The petition for a Lido at River Park, as presented to the City Council on the 12th of January, had 3,156 signatures. An international petition in 2008 to object to the closure of the Textile Conservation Centre at Winchester School of Art by the University of Southampton had 3,275 signatures. Southampton University ignored that, and finally the centre was rescued by Glasgow University. That snippet of information comes from the website of the International Institute for Conservation of Historic and Artistic Works. A response on the webpage notes that before the TTC was founded after the Second World War, tapestry conservation was a task offered to widows of museum staff instead of a pension. A writer from the Danish Society for Textile History asks, is this the level the UK wishes to return to? Textile conservation may be a topic that doesn't interest vast numbers of people, but so is modern art, or indeed the high-level scientific studies undertaken at Southampton University. But it's worth mentioning here because a centre of national or international importance is one of the offers made by Southampton to secure the River Park site. And yet the one they genuinely had, they destroyed. In his letter to this paper on January the 6th, John Loris says he finds it surprising that anyone would discourage Winchester from welcoming a proposal from a world-class research-led university. He doesn't say that he was the secretary and registrar of that university. He seems to confuse the university with a philanthropic institution and says they are not commercial bodies. It's hard to believe he hasn't noticed what has happened in the university world since the introduction of fees and cutthroat competition. I hope by now he's found out that not everyone is as dazzled by a Russell Group university as the City Council apparently is. And that's from Judith Martin of Romsey Road in Winchester.
This next item contains a small puzzle. See what you think. Skate park. Sir, I was appalled to read about the proposal to close the skate park in Winchester. There's so little that young people can do without money, and it doesn't take up much space, nor does it cause any harm or nuisance. These children belong to Winchester, and we should look after them. That's from Norma Dummer of Fallington Road, Full Flood. However, the letter editor's note says there are no proposals as such to close the skate park. The 38 Degrees online petition was sparked by the fear that in the long term the university will have no use for such a facility, a suggestion it denies.
As a letter from James Freeman, Attractive City. Sir, I have moved back to Winchester in the past 6 months after living elsewhere for nearly 50 years, and I am enjoying getting to know it again. I was heartened, therefore, to read in this week's Chronicle that Councillor Charles Radcliffe is proposing a major scheme for St Giles Hill, because it surely needs improvement. What a disappointment it is, having ascended from the bustle of the city centre, to find that most of the spectacular views available in the old days have disappeared behind a growth of undistinguished trees. Even the viewpoint has a very restricted view up the Broadway and the High Street. So work to improve the park and spruce it up is urgently needed. More power, therefore, to Councillor Radcliffe's elbow. Elsewhere in the paper is news that King Alfred's statue is to get a spruce up. I'm sure that's good. Wouldn't it be an idea at the same time to revisit the flood lighting of this magnificent monument? I took some visitors to look at King Alfred after dark, and you could hardly see him. So poor is the current illumination. This is in stark contrast to the marvellous lighting of the Guildhall just up the Broadway. And yes, we really do need to do something about the City Bridge. Does all that traffic really have to go this way? Or do we need a more imaginative solution? It's one of the worst pedestrian experiences in the city to cross that bridge when traffic is busy. Lots to do then to make our city a wonderful place to be for residents and visitors alike. And that's from James Freeman of Highcroft Road, Winchester.
This next letter also addresses the city bridge issue, and it's entitled Pedestrian Safety, and it's from Ian Tate. Sir, last week I addressed the City Council's Cabinet regarding the issue of pedestrian safety on the City Bridge, and I received a positive response to my proposals for a pedestrian footbridge. A number of people have now questioned whether this is the right solution and have suggested reducing the carriageway to one lane and installing traffic lights to regulate the flow. Also, people have questioned whether a new structure alongside the existing bridge will detract from the appearance of it. I know this part of town very well and regularly use the shops in Bridge Street, and my concerns about traffic lights are that they will leave vehicles queuing outside the shops waiting for the lights to turn green. So rather than reducing pollution levels, they will increase them. Also, I'm aware from my previous involvement with the signalled crossing at the bottom of Stanmore Lane and St Cross Road, installing traffic lights would cost something in the region of £150,000, if not more, so not much of a saving over a new footbridge. For many years, residents in Colebrook Street repeatedly asked for an improved footbridge at Abbey Mill, as the existing arrangement involved steps. Fiona Mather and I were able to negotiate a new footbridge as part of the refurbishment of Abbey Mill, and the mill is a listed building. I think the footbridge looks great and enhances the listed building. I remember the proposals for new lavatories at the cathedral, required to make life easier for people with mobility issues and to comply with the Disability Discrimination Act. The solution was to build a rather utilitarian and, in my opinion, ugly new outbuilding at the base of the cathedral, next to the north transept. Richard Jobson, partner at Design Engine, has prepared some excellent designs for the City Bridge, which are both attractive and eminently pedestrian-friendly. My conclusion is that if a footbridge can be built in front of Abbey Mill and new lavatories in front of the cathedral, then a new footbridge over the Itchen is perfectly possible. And that's from Ian Tate of St James's Lane in Winchester.
Councillor John Tippett Cooper writes about cowardly abuse. At the last full council meeting, there was a moment of rare consensus between the Liberal Democrat and Conservative councillors present. A unanimous motion passed that will see Winchester taking steps to become a city of sanctuary for people seeking asylum and refugees. All councillors who voted for the motion reflected the decency and kindness shown last summer by hundreds of Winchester people who donated time, clothes and money to support Afghan evacuees who arrived in Hampshire. However, in proposing this motion, I received a stream of abuse and online attacks, mainly from anonymous sources. The less nasty ones branding me supercilious and sanctimonious and deceitful. The more nasty ones attacking my family and me personally with racist abuse, thankfully deleted now. Next Door was forced to delete my post announcing the motion when comments included statements like "refugees will rise up and kill white people" and "Enoch Powell was right." There are many myths about people seeking asylum and refugees interwoven into these comments that need a detailed response too lengthy for a Chronicle letter. The excellent Oxford University Migration Observatory website is a good resource. home-migrationobservatory-themigrationobservatory.ox.ac.uk. I'll give you that again. ox.ac.uk. Part of the City of Sanctuary says we should challenge prejudice against people seeking asylum and refugees. Hence, I write this letter to do so. Hatred and prejudice against anyone, including people seeking asylum and refugees, has no place in our city or our district. Nothing I write here is likely to persuade people who write such comments otherwise. I only ask that they read more widely than the myths perpetuated by certain newspapers and online forums. Thankfully, the negative comments have been greatly outweighed by the many positive comments and requests for help I've received since the motion passed. We have a number of families recently resettled in Winchester District. Their council and their community welcomes them with open arms, and we do all we can to support them, including challenging any dark corners of hate and prejudice that may exist behind a cowardly, anonymous online identity. Councillor John Tippett Cooper, St Bartholomew Ward, Winchester City Council, care of Colebrook Street, Winchester.
From Mark Biden. Poor access. Sir, in your paper today, February the 3rd, you carry two articles that highlight the same problem. On page 10, a story highlights the dangerous nature of City Bridge. On page 12, a story reports the discussion at the town forum on the desirability of restoring St Giles Hill Park. They both highlight the very poor access from the east side of the city into the town centre. For 18 months, I was restricted to accessing the city by the use of a powered wheelchair. I could find no route on which I felt safe. City Bridge was impossible, East Hill is impossible, and Magdalen Hill has a dangerously narrow pinch point. It is perfectly accessible to find mobility scooters and wheelchairs that will tackle the inclines. My rented power chair took me up and down Blue Boar Hill, but it would also easily have tipped me into the road had a wheel accidentally fallen off the curb. If we want people out of their cars, we have to do better than simple exhortation. We have to widen the discussion from cyclists and pedestrians and include buggies, mobility scooters and wheelchairs. What an asset it would be to have a family-friendly, safe, accessible route from the city centre across the bridge and up to the viewpoint in the park. The views from the park used to be stunning early morning right across the city, picking out the older cream stone buildings, and the evening sunsets are special times. Sadly at present, They are largely invisible from the benches. Mark Biden, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
This short letter from Dr. Tony Saunders, Passing Death. Sir, perhaps it is the current obsession with the numbers of people dying of the COVID virus, or perhaps it's just my ageing process, that I now find myself reading the death notices in the local papers. I note that the majority of the people who have died are reported as having passed away peacefully, very few as dying. Dylan Thomas advised his dying father to rage against the dying of the light. I wonder how the death announcement of people taking his advice would read. And that's from Dr. Tony Saunders, Main Road in Otterbourne.
Councillor David Tozer complains about a lack of support for a nature reserve. Sir, your report, chronicled January 27th, that Winchester City Council is reluctant to support the concept of a nature reserve on the northern part of the Flower Down, Sir John Moore Barracks site, is very concerning. Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council's proposals for a 25-hectare local nature reserve have received resounding and wide-ranging support from residents and a variety of organisations alike. Rather than acknowledging this support, the City Council seems intent on standing aside from it. Moreover, at a pre-Christmas Flower Down stakeholder forum, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation failed to mention the proposal, despite the Parish Council previously discussing it with them at length. In the face of increasing development pressures on North Winchester, this pivotal moment cannot be missed. The need to protect valuable green spaces for biodiversity, combating climate heating and community well-being is vital. Come on, City Council, grasp this golden opportunity and align yourself with the community's proposal and demonstrate your full commitment to the green principles you always claim to be pursuing. Councillor David Tozer, Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, Burton Road, Hairstock.
Thank you, and that last letter concludes the correspondence to the editor of the Chronicle for this week. Margaret is now going to read us an historical item.
It's headed Royal Document Sells at Auction. A letter featuring the handwriting of Mary Queen of Scots has sold for £32,500 at auction, more than double asking price. Auction house Lyon and Turnbull said there was international interest in the document, signed with a message in French, as it went under the hammer, live and online, on Wednesday. The letter is an appeal from Mary Queen of Scots to the French ambassador in England to allow the safe passage of Scottish nobleman George Douglas to France. It was written in Carlisle Castle 2 months after her escape from Loch Leven Castle in Perthshire on May 2, 1568, where she had been imprisoned for nearly a year following a forced abdication in favour of her infant son James VI. Mary hoped that by helping to ensure a safe journey to France for George Douglas, he would intercede with the French king on her behalf to help secure her freedom. Cathy Marston, rare books, manuscripts and map specialist at Lyon and Turnbull, which has its headquarters in Edinburgh, said, "There was international interest in this letter. The sum achieved at auction, reflecting the enduring fascination with one of the best-known monarchs in history. There are 12 lines written by a secretary and an additional 6 lines in Mary's own hand. The letter is signed, Votre bien bonne année, Marie, which translates as your very good friend, Marie. Mary. A letter bearing her personal mark is rare, and we're delighted to have been involved in the sale of such an important text. The letter sold for more than double the asking price of £14,000. The document asks the French ambassador to Queen Elizabeth I to lend George Douglas, the bearer, 300 écus gold coins and to negotiate with the French royal family to secure George's trouble-free passage. Mary's escape had been helped by George Douglas and his cousin William Douglas.
Thank you, Margaret. Over now to Jane for Chronicle comment.
Twisting the truth for electoral gain. Our front page story highlights again the chronic pressure on the countryside around Winchester from developers. In a few months, there will be hotly contested elections for Winchester City Council, with the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives vying for control. Planning will be an issue. There is nothing wrong with that, of course. The way our district should evolve is a key part of local democracy. But it behoves both main parties to abide by certain standards. Last week, the Chronicle printed a letter from the Diva Society highlighting its unhappiness over the way the Tories had used the issue of future housing numbers to smear the Lib Dems over the Sheila list of sites for possible development. The Tories said Winchester faced having 50,000 new homes, even though they know that the Sheila is a developer's wish list and will never in a thousand years come to pass. To suggest otherwise is misleading. Let's hope local politics is not taking any lessons from populist politicians in London and the USA, for whom truth appears to be a flexible concept to be twisted for selfish ends.
Thank you. First person this week is written by George Hayter and is going to be read by Richard.
Yes, thank you. And George writes that I'm sightseeing in Rome, which, though it is 50 times the size of Winchester, is not dissimilar. Both have been capital cities, that one still is. Both burst with beauty and history, and each one gave birth to a language spoken throughout the known world. But only Rome has scores of giant palaces and places of worship, built first by billionaire emperors and, in more recent centuries, by billionaire popes. My wife and I are on a three-month holiday. We flew here with four very large suitcases, packed with everything from ski outfits to a bedside lamp. Semi-retired now, we're staying in a £2,000 a month two-bedroom apartment by the 5th century Santa Maria Maggiore church. We're on the fourth floor of a grand block built around 1920. The ceilings are about 14 foot high and higher still on the ground floor. The flat is scruffy with some rickety or broken furniture. The corner kitchen is little more than a fridge and two gas rings. The whole building is an essay in faded glory. But we love our temporary home. Trompe l'oeil murals envelop the lounge, which has 14 foot curtains, a giant octagonal dining table, a bronze sculpture, a candelabra, and a glistening chandelier 6 feet deep and 4 feet across. We arrived with 7 guidebooks. I spent over a year researching for the trip. We've been to Rome before, 9 years ago, when we stayed just 3 nights. We've come back for the mild winter climate, for the architectural feast, and for the fun of and puzzle of getting to know every square inch of the place. Struggling to communicate in Italian is an additional entertainment. So far the trip hasn't been quite the carefree holiday I was expecting. We don't know anyone here, and we are missing family and friends, particularly our toddler grandchildren. We constantly compare the weather here with the weather forecast for Winchester. Since we arrived a week ago, Rome has averaged a few centigrade higher. We still have to wear lots of layers, but it's never been cold enough for breath condensation. At the time of writing, people in Hampshire face fewer COVID restrictions than people here. We have to wear face masks all the time when we're out. Most people obey the rule, wearing masks in the street. The masks here are different. The pale blue surgical ones, usual in Britain, are not acceptable in Italy. We have to wear more substantial masks. They're the beak-like FFP2 design, made of stiffer material. Quite uncomfortable, and they make sightseeing harder. And they make my glasses steam up more. Also, Rome's stricter COVID rules require showing a green pass. Even Italian officialdom uses the English phrase as evidence that the bearer is fully vaccinated. A green pass is required to enter venues including restaurants and bars, and that sometimes means a queue as well as fumbling with your phone. and COVID regs are getting tighter. We've just learned we now have to show a green pass even to go in shops. On our third evening here, my wife and I were strolling by the Forum when we found the wide item blocked by police. An officer told us there was a student demonstration at the Coliseum. We could hear the students and a helicopter overhead. There was an alarming bang. Actually, it was more of a belly-thumping boom. Frightening. We escaped into a narrow street. Bins thud down in our street when the council empties them each evening, and distant big motorbikes sometimes disturb our sleep, but generally, Rome doesn't seem much more noisy than central Winchester. Our last long holiday, 3 years ago, was to Amsterdam, where we stayed a socking great 6 months. Since Brexit, the EU no longer lets UK citizens stay more than 3 months. We don't like being away from our children and grandchildren.
Thank you, Richard. And now for something rather closer to home. Margaret is going to read us a letter from Westminster.
And this week it's been written by Flick Drummond, MP. I'm not sure which MP.
It's not Winchester.
Not Winchester, anyway.
Meon Valley?
Is it Meon Valley? Yes.
Possibly.
I think it might be. Let's settle for that.
Yes, right. Sue Gray's initial report on Downing Street events during COVID regulations was published last weekend. And like many, I was frustrated that it could not say more ahead of a police investigation into alleged rule-breaking at number 10. I certainly welcomed the PM apologising and recognising that the Downing Street and Cabinet Office operations are not up to the high standards we would all expect. He has started to reshape his team with a new Chief of Staff and a new Director of Communications. This is also welcome. But talk of excessive drinking and questions over leadership and judgment in the Grey Report are very concerning. And I agree the PM does have to look in the mirror, address such issues as a matter of urgency. It appears this is now happening. Sadly, we will now have to wait for the police investigation to conclude. I don't want to prejudge that investigation. However, it is important, I add, it would be an enormous step to remove an elected Prime Minister unless criminal charges were an issue. One of my priorities is to ensure better broadband for Meon Valley residents, as many villages are still in the digital dark ages. Working from home has made this a big issue in rural communities, but one, Ossulbury, has recently had some good news. The village has long suffered from slow sleep speeds because of traditional copper wire infrastructure rather than modern fibre optic cables. Now 100 residents have come together to create a partnership with Openreach to upgrade their broadband connection using gigabit broadband vouchers from Building Digital UK. My team and I worked very hard with the County Council, Parish Council and Openreach to make this happen and to help move over to the new voucher scheme after the deadline for the previous one was missed. The vouchers can be used to cover each household's contribution towards the total cost of the work. They are funded by the government to help rural areas achieve faster broadband speeds. I am really pleased for the villagers, but I know this is just one success and there are other villages like Bramdeane that need this investment urgently. If you are struggling with broadband speeds in Meon Valley, then please get in touch. I would also encourage everyone affected to look at the voucher scheme too. COVID news continues to be positive with falling infection rates. Hospitalisations and deaths remain a fatter fraction than they were when we did not have the vaccines. The booster campaign has been a huge success in the UK and many experts are now starting to believe that here and in Europe we could be coming to the end of the pandemic. I cannot now see a need for any further lockdowns as we become more adept at minimising virus transmissions and treating people who get it more effectively while protecting the vulnerable with vaccines. We cannot be complacent. A new variant might throw us, but the days when we were defenceless in the face of COVID are over. I'm looking forward to a return to normal.
Thank you, Margaret. Jane, may we have Belgarum, please?
Belgarum this week is What Value on a Medieval Space? Had the Silver Hill scheme gone ahead a few years back, this medieval alleyway, Cross Keys Passage, would have been destroyed forever. The City Council and developer wanted to demolish the 19th century building, although it looks older, that houses the Oxfam charity shop on the High Street, to improve access to the £150 million scheme in the area between Friars Gate and the Broadway. Civic chiefs felt that the multi-million development needs to be more accessible to the public. Such accessibility to the new development was considered more important than preserving one of the few remaining medieval, perhaps even Saxon, passageways that run north and south off the High Street. As far as Belgarum is concerned, these passages are a highly important part of the city. Of course, they have no value, as they are just narrow spaces. But shouldn't the City Council be more sensitive to what makes Winchester special? The other alleyways include Hammond's Passage next to Zizi and the former offices of the Hampshire Chronicle, as well as Royal Oak Passage that serves the pub of that name, as does Baker's Arms Passage. Many of these thoroughfares have already been lost. One ran through what is now Boots, but got swallowed up at some point in the last century and incorporated into the shop. Silver Hill, Saxon Gate, the Central Winchester Regeneration, whatever it's called, has not gone away. In fact, progress is being made with important recent decisions to press ahead with one developer. It will be interesting if the City Council displays yet another tin ear to history and decides the Oxfam charity shop should go for better accessibility.
Thank you, Jane. Richard, may we please have What's On?
Yes, and I've got details about some youth theatre performances. The youth section of a Winchester theatre have two plays coming up with extra tickets available. Chisel Theatre's young actors have announced that an extra 13 seats each night have been made available for their performances of The Snow Queen and Young Jane on February the 17th and 18th. The junior section, aged 8 to 12, is presenting a new adaptation of Hans Christian Andersen's classic fairy tale The Snow Queen, written specifically for them by director Sarah Jacobs. The senior group's choice is Young Jane by local writer Cecily O'Neill, inspired by the writing of Jane Austen at the same age as the young actors, 13 to 16. Booking was announced for the two performances in early January and sold out within days. Chesil Youth Theatre producer Joe Ashwell said, "At the Chesil, we previously needed to restrict audience numbers during the pandemic, but thanks to a new ventilation system just completed, we can return to our full capacity. We were so pleased at the instant response in bookings for our youth theatre shows that we can now offer more seats to those who might have been disappointed." It's 2 years since Chesil Youth Theatre's last production in February 2020 of Two Roald Dahl Tales, although many appeared in the company's outdoor show last summer, taking roles in A Midsummer Night's Dream. Tickets are also now available for Chesil Theatre's production If I Were You by leading playwright Alan Akeborn. This runs from April the 2nd to the 9th, with full details from www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. Chesil Theatre in Winchester can be found on Chesil Street.
Thank you, Richard. And there is only one announcement this week, which is one of our usual ones. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. With further items of general news.
Right, college students in farmland bird count. Students and staff from Sparshot College Group are taking part in an environmental project this month. the GWCT Big Farmland Bird Count started on February the 4th and takes place until February the 20th. A number of year groups across Sparshot College's land and wildlife courses have been carefully learning the GWCT methodology in their classes before heading out on Sparshot's 183-hectare campus when the count launches to make a real difference to the UK's songbirds. The Big Farmland Bird Count has been organised by the GWCT every year since 2014 to encourage farmers and gamekeepers to support farmland birds and highlight the hard work already done by many of them to help reverse species declines. The count also gives a vital national snapshot of the health of the UK's bird life. For the fourth year running, 2022's count is sponsored by the National Farmers Union, demonstrating the farming community's commitment to conserving farmland birds. NFU President Minette Batters said 2021's results were fantastic, with farmers and growers across the country responding to the count in record numbers. Game and Wildlife Conservation Trust Dr. Roger Draycott, who runs the count, said farmers and gamekeepers are vital in helping to ensure the survival of many of our cherished farmland bird species, such as skylark, yellowhammer, corn buntings and wild grey partridges. They are responsible for managing the largest songbird habitat in this country on their land, so they are in a position to make a real difference. Julie Milburn, Principal and CEO of Sparshot College Group, said, "Not only are farmers producing climate-friendly food, they are also maintaining and protecting the great British countryside, creating habitats for wildlife and additional feeding for farmland birds. I encourage all farmers to get involved in the 2022 GWCT Big Farmland Bird Count." Dave Locke, Curriculum Leader for Land and Wildlife Courses at Sparshot College, said, "The GWCT is such a fantastic project to inspire our students with. As the farmers and gamekeepers of the future, they are so passionate about the world around them and are keen to make a real difference in the work that they do and will continue to do as they pursue their own careers in the sector. We can't wait to monitor our populations across our countryside campus again this year and record the wide variety of species that call Sparshot College their home."
Charity calls for ACT to appear at fair. A charity is calling for people interested in performing at this year's Hat Fair to get in touch. Play to the Crowd, the charity that runs Hat Fair, Winchester's annual festival of outdoor arts, wants to hear from acts who want to perform at the event, which runs from the 1st of July, Friday, until Sunday, July the 3rd. Play to the Crowd, formerly Live Theatre Winchester Trust, is a registered arts and education charity based in Winchester that incorporates Hat Fair, Theatre Royal Winchester and Playmakers. The charity forms part of the Arts Council England's national portfolio. A spokeswoman said, "Hat Fair is a family-friendly festival of street performance and outdoor arts. It originated as a buskers festival, with acts asking for donations in hats after their act, hence the name Hat Fair. Today, the festival is one of the most renowned street performance and outdoor arts festivals, and as well as the Hatters, the weekend includes dance, theatre and circus performances from national and international artists performing alongside local and community artists and musicians. Whether you're a singer, musician, comic, member of a choir or dance troupe, or have another unique short performance you would like to share with the public, this is your chance to shine. To apply, go to hatfair.co.uk/info/artists and go to the local talent section, or email engagement producer Hannah Jones at hannah.j@playtothecrowd.co.uk.
Plans for a New Hampshire hospital remain on course. Plans to build a new hospital for Basingstoke remain on course, according to those in charge, despite being a year behind its scheduled timeline. It was announced in 2020 that Basingstoke would get a new hospital as part of a £3.7 billion government funding package. Alex Whitfield, chief executive of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, HHFT, said last year that it is hoped the new hospital will be built by 2028. It is highly relevant for the future of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, with many people fearing it will mean a downgrade in services, even the closure of the A&E department. A published timeline said that a summary of our findings would be released before Christmas 2020, after which a formal public consultation would be held from January to March 2021. It said this will include a preferred way forward, which we think is best for them. However, a year later, and the public consultation has still not taken place. In May last year, a joint statement from HHFT and Hampshire, Southampton and Isle of Wight Clinical Commissioning Group said it was agreed following discussions with national and regional NHS colleagues that plans for a new hospital will be even stronger if we can incorporate newly available national planning information and recent learnings from around the country. I'm sorry, what on earth does any of that mean?
Who knows, but let's press on.
Peregrine returns to Winchester Cathedral. For the sixth year running, Winnie the Peregrine Falcon has returned to the ledge of Winchester Cathedral. The resident falcon, who had at least 25 chicks at the breeding site with her late mate Chester, has been spotted over the past week on the cathedral's peregrine cam, with further sightings of her flying around the cathedral also recorded. Winnie, who hatched another three peregrine chicks in 2021, will now sit in wait of a new potential mate after Chester died in May last year. A post-mortem found the bird of prey to be underweight with internal parasites. Providing an update on Winnie's return, one of the vergers at Winchester Cathedral, Ian James, said, "There is a little bit of an update on the peregrines. We have now seen the female round the cathedral, and it has actually been seen up on the ledge within the last week. At the same time, we are now up and running with our peregrine page on the website, and the cameras are live. So if you look on that throughout the day, there's a very good chance you'll see the female at the nest site."
Same-day tip bookings debated by council. Bookings for tips across Hampshire could soon be made on the same day, council has advised. Councillors at Hampshire County Council debated the tip booking system at a meeting on Thursday, January the 27th, which has been in place since June 2020. The system has meant people have to book a slot within a 30-minute period when they can visit the tip, although multiple trips can be made. Councillors praised the scheme, which has alleviated many traffic problems at waste and recycling centres, but also want to see the system move forward. Councillor Martin Todd, Liberal Democrat spokesman for Economy, Transport and Environment, said, "In most parts of the county, the balance of opinion has been clearly in favour of the system. If we're making this permanent, I would like to see us take a forward step to improve the service. One improvement I would like to see is same-day booking. Given how many slots there are each day, I think this would be really helpful, both for residents and for us to reach capacity. Since the booking system was launched, it has been used more than 3 million times, and evidence suggests that the queues that previously existed have become a thing of the past. The system is currently managed by a third party, which is costing the County Council £40,000 a year, but the County Council will look to bring the system in-house. James Potter, Assistant Director of Waste, Planning and Environment, said the council had previously explored the option of same-day bookings, but had lacked the technology to make it possible. He said, "We've been looking at this idea for quite a long period of time now. The issue that we have faced is releasing information that could potentially be a GDPR breach. That being said, we've made a technological breakthrough that could allow us to trial it at some sites in the future." As it stands, the County Council will be making the tip booking system permanent following a decision day from Deputy Council Leader Councillor Rob Humby after the Select Committee. Portsmouth will also be maintaining its booking system at Port Solent, although Southampton is running a three-month trial for residents to turn up as they please. Critics say the booking system has led to an increase in fly tipping across the county. In Winchester, last summer, signs were installed at some of the most frequently fly-tipped locations, indicating that surveillance cameras and a number of small wildlife cameras had been installed.
Former child soldier performs in Winchester. A Winchester community were given a rare opportunity to meet the world's most famous former child soldier and to hear his story. Emmanuel Jow visited St Paul's Church in Winchester on February the 6th to use his painful experiences to bring courage and inspiration to young children. It was the leaders of St Paul's Preschool who first reached out to Mr Jow in inviting him to perform for their community. However, in the event, a wide range of people turned up to see him packing St Paul's Church to capacity. On February the 7th, Mr Jow also visited Winchester Prison to share his story. Kim Parker, who brought her two young children to the performance at St Paul's, said it was amazing. His story is incredible. You can't believe where he came from and where he is today. It's so inspiring. Liv Boyd agreed. It was fascinating to hear someone's life story like that and to hear how it changed him, allowing him to create such a positive life out of something that started so badly. Angus Watson said it was absolutely inspirational for all ages. Mr Jow was given an AK-47 at the age of 8 and sent to fight in Sudan's bloody civil war. He spent several years fighting with the SPLA in Ethiopia until war broke out there too, and the child soldiers were forced back into Sudan by the fighting and joined the SPLA's efforts to fight the government in the town of Juba. When the fighting became unbearable, Mr Jow and some other children decided to run away. Some 35 years on, he's become so well known for his ability to inspire hope and self-belief by telling his story, using a captivating blend of memory, music and poetry. Mr Jow first came to the world's attention when he published War Child, a memoir that formed the basis for an award-winning film in 2006. He's a spokesman for the Make Poverty History campaign, the Coalition to Stop the Use of Child Soldiers, and the Control Arms campaign. Now an internationally renowned hip-hop artist and public speaker, his life has been devoted to using his experiences to help others. His has been a star-studded journey. He sang at Nelson Mandela's 90th birthday and has collaborated with Alicia Keys and Kofi Annan, amongst many others. But he says his mission is to communicate with anyone who might benefit from what he has to say. And in the service of that mission, he tours the planet, speaking to school groups, youth groups and underprivileged communities, passing on his message of peace and redemption. One young person who lives in a youth detention centre and attended one of his previous performances said, "He went through so much and can still be peaceful. I want to get there." A teacher at a previous performance said, "My students were looking forward to meeting a world celebrity. They connected instead with a citizen of the world."
Marvellous. City Centre Light Festival extended. Winchester's recent Lights in the City event has been extended. It has now been extended to March the 13th to support the recovering evening economy in the city. The giant tulip illuminations in Abbey Gardens are a must-see, and the council is encouraging people to take selfies and use the hashtag Winchester Lights. Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "It's been a really challenging time for local business, and the City Council has been working hard to get people back to our high streets right across the district. The Lights in the City event has been a real hit. It's been a great seeing people of all ages going through the city, passing the Knights and Hampshire roses projected next to the Great Hall, through the Westgate Arch, down through the square to the lit up row of trees leading up to the cathedral, past the Guildhall and arriving in Abbey Gardens with its giant lit up tulips and trees.
Bell ringers mark Christian anniversary. Winchester Cathedral's bell ringers were back in action on February the 6th to musically mark the 70th anniversary of the accession of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. On the same day, 70 years ago, in 1952, Winchester's cathedral bells were ringing to celebrate the Queen's accession. 70 years on, Tower Captain Nick Bucknell led the band in sequences, including Kings, to commemorate the passing of King George VI, followed by Queens in acknowledgement of the Queen's Jubilee. Winchester was one of hundreds of towers across the country who rang especially for the royal occasion. Members of the current band rang a quarter peal of Plain Bob Minor, conducted by ringing master Michael Hopkins Till, to honour this unique anniversary of Britain's longest reigning monarch. The ringers previously sounded the bells on December the 31st to mark the start of the new year as part of a centuries-old tradition, sounding out the 12 strokes of the midnight hour.
Controversial house plan sees 26 objections. Winchester planners have approved an application for a new house in the city centre, despite local concerns. The plan is to construct a new three-bed dwelling house, facing Edgar Road, submitted by Mr. Sowden of 10 St. Cross Road. However, concerns were brought to the planning committee about the impact on the local area, with 26 letters of objection submitted. Concerns were also raised that the new building would be overlooking neighbouring properties, including De Boulay's, a Winchester College boarding house. In the planning statement it said, in order to reduce any potential overlooking into the surrounding gardens from the terrace, it's proposed to install an opaque glass balustrade which will measure 2.1 metres above floor level on each side and 1.4 metre to the front of the terrace. Representing the local objectors was Robert Carter, who lived next door at number 12 St Cross Road. Mr Carter said, there are too many issues raised by objectors and planners have chosen to ignore. It's quite preposterous to claim that the problem of overlooking to the rear of the proposed site will be solved by putting up an opaque glass balcony. This will be 1.4 metres high. Any adult of average height can look over it. The planners haven't mentioned the rest of the elevation is covered with windows and balconies which would intrude on neighbours' privacy. The front of the building looks directly into the boys' dormitories at De Boulay's, which contravenes the 2004 Children's Act and which places a duty of care on local authorities. If the applicant cared about the local community, they wouldn't be doing this. Ward Councillor Charles Radcliffe said, ultimately, the question should be whether the loss of privacy and other amenities, the risk of overdevelopment and the impact on the character of the street are of significant concern to justify withholding planning permission in this case. The agent representing the applicant was unable to attend the meeting, so Jack Sowden gave supporting comments. He said, the building is in place of two garages that have been no use to the area. The development seeks to contribute to the streetscape and wider area. The proposed scheme looks to improve the site and be a high-quality house for the local area. Councillor Jane Rutter suggested adding swift boxes to the landscaping of the plan to improve biodiversity. Councillor Therese Evans, chair of the planning committee, said, I can't see any material planning reason to refuse this application. The application was approved with 5 votes to 4, 1 against and 2 abstaining. An amendment was made to add the swift boxes.
New COVID strain rising in district. The new COVID variant of Omicron has continued to increase in Winchester, according to recent data. The Sanger Institute in Cambridge have been mapping the BA2 variant called Stealth Omicron across the country. It has been nicknamed Stealth Omicron because it is harder to detect than the main variants. Winchester has the highest number of estimated cases, according to the Sanger Institute data, but overall COVID numbers are dropping. There are 90 estimated for Winchester up to January the 22nd, which is up from 47 during the previous week. This accounts for 6.1% of the total cases in the area. Basingstoke and Deane have 78, East Hampshire have 68, Southampton have 37, and Eastleigh have 17. The Test Valley and New Forest have zero cases. According to the United Kingdom Health Security Agency, UKHSA, website, BA2 has an increased growth rate compared to BA1 in all regions of England. Dr. Susan Hopkins, Chief Medical Advisor for UKHSA, said, "Ongoing variant analysis is an important part of our pandemic response. Thanks to the expertise of scientists at UKHSA and partner organisations, we're able to respond quickly to new variations of the virus. We now know that BA2 has an increased growth rate, which can be seen in all regions in England. We have also learned that BA2 has a slightly higher secondary attack rate than BA1 in households. Although hospitalizations and deaths remain low, cases are still high in some areas and some age groups, so it's important that we continue to act cautiously as restrictions are lifted. Consider wearing a face covering when in crowded places. Take a vaccine to protect yourself against COVID-19. If you have any symptoms, take a test. The number of cases in Winchester is 1,511 in the 7 days to February the 6th. Meanwhile, Winchester University has emerged as a new hotspot for COVID infections, according to new figures. The university says that on Friday there were 246 cases, with 25 new cases reported between Thursday and Friday, and 152 linked to the campus. This compares to only 66 at the start of January, with 9 new cases reported on New Year's Eve and 31 linked to the university. There are unconfirmed reports that a student with COVID socialised in the students' union recently, spreading the disease. The university has been asked to comment. COVID numbers are rising in 3 areas of Winchester where most of the student housing is situated: Stanmore, Winchester West and Winchester East. Across the Winchester district, cases are still rising in 3 areas, 2 of them in the city and dropping in 11 others, mainly in rural areas.
New restaurant to create 50 jobs in the city centre. A new Thai restaurant will create 50 jobs when it opens in the city. Thai restaurant Giggling Squid has announced plans to open doors in Winchester this summer on a date to be fixed. Located in 12 to 13 The Square, the restaurant will offer 50 job vacancies, with chefs, managers and bar staff wanted for full-time and part-time positions. It will be in the premises vacated by the Slug and Lettuce. Giggling Squid co-founder Andy Lauriard said, "Thai mealtimes are energetic, informal, adventurous, and where food is celebrated. It's relaxed and there's no standing on ceremony. We simply want people to have a great time over something tasty. Every Giggling Squid has its own personal touch to it, and this restaurant is no different. It's a beautifully designed space that we hope will bring a lot of pleasure to our guests. We can't wait to welcome everyone." Giggling Squid features a menu of chicken, beef, fish, stir-fry, curry and noodles, as well as vegan and vegetarian options.
And it'll have competition from a new Nepalese eatery, which is about to open soon. A husband and wife are set to open a new Nepalese restaurant in Winchester after their dumplings, sweet and sour chicken and summer rolls proved popular on their weekly market stall. Lakshmi Lama and her husband and restaurant manager Santosh Chumi, 35, are set to open Marse, that's M-A-R-S-E, an ancient grains Nepalese restaurant in early March at the Brook Shopping Centre. The business started as a part-time food stall in Winchester in 2019. Owner and chef Laxmi from Winchester said, "Since then we've only been trading in Winchester as we've always wanted Winchester to be our home for business. We love Winchester for its history, its art, architecture and the sense of community for small and independent businesses with the aims of sustainability." The restaurant at Unit 30 will feature a small seating area with a bar and a kitchen. Outdoor seating has also been applied for and is under review by the council. Open from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and serving mostly takeaway food, Laxmi's team will consist of five, with applications being accepted mid-February. The restaurant will stick to their popular menu of handmade Momo Nepalese dumplings, ancient grain rice, sweet and sour chicken, Nepali quat bean stew, summer rolls, and parsnip and onion pakoras. Yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, indeed.
Technology help. People aged over 65 are being given the opportunity to have lessons on how to use their tech. TechFest 65, a free event that helps over 65s become more confident using their smartphones, tablets and laptops, is returning to Winchester on Thursday, February the 24th at the United Church Winchester. Hosted by Winchester-based domiciliary care company Everycare, the afternoon event will help local people get more from their tech gadgets. Everyday Care supports older people living at home with expert trained home care professionals. Attendees will also be given the chance to experience the latest assisted living technology. The Office for National Statistics, ONS 2021, has reported that 3.36 million adults in the UK have never used the internet. TechFest 65 will consist of a series of hands-on workshops where older people and their families are encouraged to bring their phones, laptops and tablets to learn firsthand how to get more from their gadgets. While smartphones and tablets are the main focus of the workshop, attendees will also be able to explore social media, apps, the internet and more. The event will be held on Thursday, February the 24th at United Church Winchester at 1:30 until 3:30 p.m. Tickets are free and can be booked by emailing booking at techfest, that's techfest65.co.uk, or calling 01962 842 548. 01962 842 548.
Police act over nuisance callers. Officers are targeting a crackdown on youths who have been excessively kicking and banging doors and windows in Winchester. Police say they've received multiple reports from residents of kids playing knock door run across the city, causing some elderly occupants distress from the loud and sudden noise. An investigation has now been launched into the antisocial behaviour, with officers promising those responsible can expect to hear from them very soon. Parents have also been asked to remain mindful of the incidents and ensure their children are aware of the impact such behaviour can have. A spokesperson for Winchester Police said, "We are aware of reports from some of the city residents of youths playing knock door run across the city, in some cases excessively kicking and banging doors and windows of properties. This has caused some residents distress from the loud and sudden noise. We would like to remind people who are taking part in this type of antisocial behaviour of the impact that this can have on elderly or vulnerable occupants. We will investigate these reports, and those responsible can expect to hear from our officers. We would like to ask parents across the city to be mindful of these incidents and ensure that their children are aware of the impact that this can have on residents."
Winchester doctor suspended for harassing colleagues. A Winchester doctor who was repeatedly violent to one female colleague and harassed another has been suspended for 9 months. Dr. Araran Sikuvarma, who previously worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, was described as physically abusive, cruel, controlling and obsessive during a professional standards hearing which concluded on January the 21st. Both of the women involved were also doctors, who the doctor himself believed he had relationships with. The Medical Practitioners Tribunal Service found he climbed through one woman's bedroom window between May and August in 2015 and held her hands together while she was lying on the bed. The same victim, who is referred to as Dr. A, confusingly, in the meeting papers, was also left with bruises on her arms after being restrained by the doctor, who was further found to have held his arm across her neck during multiple instances of physical abuse. Witnesses described him as an intense character who would become angry if she spoke with other male colleagues, calling her obscenities if he did. When she threatened to expose his behaviour, the doctor responded with, "No one will believe a silly little girl." Dear, dear. Dr. Sivakumar acknowledged that his behaviour had impacted on colleagues and friends as well as his victims and said, "At some point in my life, most if not all of the individuals involved are people I would have considered to be close friends. And I'm sorry to have put them through this. My past actions have clearly hurt them, and with benefit of time, maturity and reflection, I realise my behaviour has upset them, and for that I am truly sorry."
Mm. And this is just a little note. Street parties. Anyone thinking of holding a street party for the Queen's 70th anniversary jubilee in June needs to apply for a street closure licence soon. The deadline for application to the City Council is March the 11th, the Town Forum heard.
Road mark to crash crossroads. Road markings have been painted at the spot where a cyclist died after a collision last year, writes Andrew Napier. The white paint now clearly shows the right-of-way at the junction of Woodman Lane and Sarum Road near Sparsholt. It shows traffic on Woodman Lane has priority. When David Davenport was fatally injured on June the 8th, they were virtually invisible, as shown by these photographs, and there are pictures with this article, by Michael Warner of Quarry Road, Winchester. The inquest in Winchester was due to be resumed on March the 10th, but it's currently not listed on the public list of future inquests. Mr. Warner told the Chronicle he had been a regular cyclist along the road and had grown concerned by the deterioration. A white memorial bike was placed by a tree at the junction after Mr. Davenport's death. The initial inquest hearing heard that Mr. Davenport, 59, of Archers Road, Eastleigh, was involved in a collision with a Mini Cooper. He was taken to Southampton General Hospital and died on June the 16th.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Jane Rutter.
Thank you and goodbye.
Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Richards, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you have finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.